By the time we'd gone 20 miles, the sky overhead had turned deep and clear. A quarter moon shined bright from within a purple dome. Another 10 miles and we hit tall, dry grass, which swished against our horses' legs. When we stopped near morning, the ground was firm and dry, turning to rock and sprinkled with clumps of buffalo grass. We did not sleep, but instead sipped coffee and rested our horses until a thin sliver of sunlight split the eastern sky. When we started to push on, I saw the Catahoula Cur dart in and out of our string of horses like a sergeant readying troops for a field march.
Reckon he thinks he's on the payroll. Or maybe he just likes bossing something around.
By noon, we came upon a family of settlers in a rickety wagon headed the opposite direction with two sad-looking mules pulling them slowly along. The man's eyes were red-rimmed and shiny with fear. A tired-looking woman sat close behind him with a shotgun cradled in one arm and a curly-headed baby nursing her breast in the other. Three more kids gathered near her skirt. Flies swarmed in a wavering stench of warm milk and wet diapers. Cut his mules loose and stick a couple horses against the wagon. I reckon if we're giving them away to whores and lawmen. The settler threw back a drink from one of our canteens and passed it quickly over his shoulder. Water trickled through his beard.
Oh, Lord God, I don't know how to thank you, mister.
His mules staggered from exhaustion as Jack started unhitching them.
We was just gonna go till they dropped, and then walk from there. As far as I know, we're the last ones out.
What kept you? Didn't you know Red Cloud is on a killing spree?
Had a short spread up off the Bozeman. 19 head of cattle. Now they're gone. We're lucky to be alive. If it weren't for the woman and the young'uns, I'd stay and fight them off.
The woman's rough hand came up over the seat and rested on his arm. I took a round of dried shank and a canteen of water from our supplies, walked over and pitched them up on the wagon seat. Well, this'll get you to Crofton.
We always got along with the Sioux till the army started building that blasted fort.
I gazed out across the stretch of grassland. This was big country. I saw why the government wanted it and why Red Cloud wouldn't give it up.
I figured when Red Cloud just told us to leave instead of killing us right off, maybe there was a chance of staying. I sure figured wrong. Now the Dull Knife Cheyenne is riding with him. Red Cloud has given him free run. They've gone plumb loco. I can't figure it out. We've been friends with Red Cloud and his bunch for the longest time.
They're telling you that you ain't welcome here anymore. Is that too hard to understand? As soon as I said it, I regretted it. I saw the hollow desperation in his eyes.
The Injuns don't want us up here. The folks back east don't want us there. You tell me, mister, how's a man supposed to scrape up enough to fill his youngins' bellies? We gotta live somewhere.
I know.
What brings y'all up here, anyhow?
Business.
We're tourists.
I shot a hard glance toward Jack and Shod. We're taking horses to Fort Kearney.
If you think Red Cloud will stand still for you taking horses to the army, you're crazy. You see how he's drove us out, and we're neighbors. He'll skin you fellas alive.
When we pitched camp, we tended a low fire and took two-hour turns of keeping watch. Like the old guerrilla days, we staked our string of dealing stock 10 yards away and slept sitting up with the reins to our riding horses in our hands. At midnight, Jack nudged me with his boot. I wrapped my blanket around me and walked over to the edge of camp just out of the dim firelight. Jack stepped beside me with a hot cup of coffee. I leaned against a tree and sipped it.
Something's stirring about 100 yards out. They moved closer the past 10 minutes.
Why didn't you wake us?
No hurry.
No hurry? Jack, I've got a bounty man and a gang of killers to worry about, not counting that we're in Indian country here.
It ain't Indians.
You don't know that, Jack. Reckon it could be that dog?
No. He's with the horses, spread on his back with his pecker pointing to heaven.
Then it has to be Indians.
Nope, because if it was, I wouldn't have heard them.
Well, that's great, Jack. That's the kind of craziness that gets a fellow killed. If we're lucky, it's only Flowers or the Pope gang.
You're really starting to worry too much. You need to relax.
We listened into the woods surrounding us.
See what I mean? It's the sound of one rider, two at most.
He was right. The sound was low, steady, and coming from one direction. I glanced at Jack and nodded my head. He knew what to do. I leaned against the tree and listened to the sound grow closer. We'd had run-ins with hostiles down in the Indian Nations back during the war, but nothing like this. Up here it was Sioux and Cheyenne, enough of them to have the army tiptoeing around Montana and enough to impede the laying of track for the largest railroad in the world. At least, that's the way it read in the newspapers. Red Cloud's warriors had grown steadily in numbers, and he'd served notice. This was his hunting ground, and all whites would leave or die. Here I sat, white as last Christmas. I couldn't ask for a better partner than Jack Smith when it came to nerve or handling a gun. Nobody could outshoot him. At least, nobody ever had, and nobody could outnerve him. Nobody at all. We'd taken on Big Shot as a hired hand, and I knew nothing about him except he was big enough to shoulder an ox. We'd hired him 6 weeks ago coming out of Nebraska territory, another of Jack's ideas. Now he was a full partner. I listened to the silence, hoping Jack was right about it not being Indians. Deep down, I knew I had no business being here, heading farther into this dangerous place from which sane and decent folks had already fled. But it seemed that the more I saw others leaving, going the other way as fast as their fear would carry them, the more intent I became on seeing why. I felt like a man fascinated by fire and drawn closer and closer to the flames. I knew it could hurt me, but I had to touch the heat and feel it burn. The second I sensed something stir beside me, I started to swing my rifle around, but I froze as the cold barrel of a .44 pressed below my ear.
Gotcha.
The voice stepped around before me. From beneath his frayed hat brim, I saw his eyes dart toward the campfire, then back to me. Big Shot sat still, wrapped in his blanket, with just the top of his hat sticking out. Jack's blanket lay piled on the ground.
Where's the other man?
I stared straight into his shadowed eyes. He's about 4 feet behind you, getting ready to shoot your head off. His eyes narrowed as if I might be bluffing. But before he could say a word, Jack stepped from the brush behind him and tapped him on the head with his rifle barrel. See how it works? Reaching real slow, I started to push his gun away. He held firm. He called out over his shoulder.
No! Here's how it works. Kermit, blow his head off!
An ugly smile spread across his bad teeth. Behind Jack, the woods lay silent.
Kermit! David boy!
You could sense him wanting to look back over his shoulder. Still, there was no sound except Jack's dark laughter.
Last time I saw your friend, his boots were flapping 2 feet off the ground, and a big old fella was holding him up by the throat.
The ugly smile faded, and his jaws went slack.
No! Hell!
He offered no resistance as I took the gun from his hand.
Damn it! I ain't had no luck in the longest time. Now I reckon you'll kill me, won't you?
I reckon so. Now I was pointing his gun against his chest.
No, I knowed it. By God, I just knowed it.
Big Shot walked in from the brush with the skinny young feller hanging from his hand. The feller gagged and wiggled like a fish on line.
What do you suggest I do with this one?
I glanced toward the campfire. Big Shot's blanket still sat propped up like he was sleeping with his rifle across his lap. It had even fooled me.
Oh, mister, don't kill him. He's just a kid. He was just doing what I told him to. I swear to God.
Yeah, but you sure came in here to kill us. Now, be a man about it.
Ah, mister, I couldn't have killed you. There ain't a bullet in that gun.
Oh, really? Nothing. It just snapped on an empty chamber. I shrugged and lowered the gun from his heart.
See? We're just so hungry, we had to try something. My boy Kermit has one shell in his shotgun, but we wouldn't have killed nobody if we could have kept from it.
I nodded to Big Shot. He turned loose of the boy's throat, and the boy fell to the ground. Jack reached out a hand and patted the old man's coat for any weapons.
See? Clean as a whistle.
Where's your stores and your horses?
Got neither. Indians picked us clean over the past winter. All we got's an old mule we rode in on.
We can use a good mule.
Oh, come on now, mister, please don't kill us.
The young man sat rubbing his throat and staring wide-eyed. Why haven't the Indians killed you both?
We've stayed ahead of them. This is big country, and I know it well. It's hard to get caught as long as you keep quiet. Things weren't so bad till the army started building that blasted fort. That's when Red Cloud went nuts. He sent out Crazy Horse and the warriors. You're not after the bounty on Red Cloud, are you?
Bounty?
That's ridiculous. There's no such thing.
I better go get my new mule.
Mister, please, you don't have to kill us.
The old feller fell to his knees. I glanced between Jack and Shad. They just stared with no expression at the old man.
All we was doing is trying to stay alive here. I've never harmed a soul. I do right by everybody. I just got no luck. Don't kill us for that.
Catahoula appeared out of nowhere. He sniffed the old man's leg. Now that I'd shaken the mud of Crofton off my boots and was able to do some clearer thinking, I realized that fear and self-interest had turned the town a little crazy. Craziness showed itself in the eyes and actions of everybody I met, but while I was there, I was standing too close to see it. While I was in it, I was no different from the rest. Now that I was out, it was clear as a bell. Crofton was the place rats swam to from the sinking ship. It was that point of a terrible nightmare where the sleeper realizes he has to wake up or die. Nobody wanted to think it or say it, but the United States government, with all its military resource, was on the verge of losing a war within its own borders, losing it to a bunch of ragged Indians on wild ponies. It was unthinkable, unspeakable, yet deep down, everybody knew it. It was the core of the craziness, and Crofton lay at the edge of reason, like a wounded coyote snapping at its own guts. I never saw a man work as hard and talk as much as Ben Bone. His son, Kermit, was a fair hand at wrangling horses. Anytime I wanted him to work a little harder, I put him with Big Shad. He seemed real impressed that Shad had plucked him up by his throat and held him there for nearly a half hour. Old Ben must have figured the more he talked, the better we would like him. I never told him we wouldn't kill him and his boy, so he never shut up. We'd fed them that night, telling them it was their last meal. They ate like they believed it. The rest of the night, whoever was standing watch would walk past the tree where we kept them tied and point the cocked gun at them. We would stand there a while like we still hadn't made up our mind. It was cruel, I reckon, but they had come upon us at gunpoint. We owed them something. Fact is, except for the circumstances, I was glad we ran into Ben and Kermit Bone. Ben knew the country and said he spoke Sioux. Since the rest of us didn't know either, I decided to keep them along and watch them close. When we got to Powder River, it was Bone who guided us through the long stretches of quicksand. We didn't lose a single horse. I sat down and talked with old Ben the evening we made the Powder River crossing. Here's how it works. You carry your guns, Ben Bone. I'll carry the bullets. Jack and Big Shot had gone with Kermit to tend our stock. I watched Ben work up a low fire and break out cooking utensils.
Oh, that's just fine. Nothing suits me better. I trust your judgment on that more than I do my own. I was just saying to Kermit how much...
Can ease off the bull. If you do well leading us to Fort Kearney, I reckon we won't kill you.
Sure enough, yeah.
Ben sat down on a pile of driftwood.
You know, I feel real bad about me and Kermit doing what we did. It ain't like us at all. This country makes a man do peculiar things. I just wish we'd met up with you boys sooner. If me and Kermit had been with you to begin with, you wouldn't have had to hire that, you know.
I don't know. Old Ben kept an open ear for anything that might get him inside our personal business. We saw it, but never let on. The night before, he'd asked where Jack and I were from. We both lied. I said Alabama, Jack said Pennsylvania.
Oh, that black fella. You being a southerner, I know you can't have much use for the likes of him.
He does his job, and he's my partner.
I ain't butting in, but I can't see the two of you lasting long as partners. I reckon your other partner, the Yankee, must have brought him in.
Ben was picking at anything he could find. Jack Smith was really from New Jersey, not Pennsylvania. He'd come from an upstanding northern family. Why he'd hooked up with Quantrill's guerrilla forces and fought for the South was anybody's guess, but he and I had spilled blood together and saved each other's hides more than once. There was no room for Ben Bone to fester anything between Quiet Jack and me, but Big Shot was a whole other thing. I wasn't about to admit it, but Ben was partly right. I didn't like taking Shot in as a partner. I don't know why. I hadn't even favored hiring him, but once he joined us, I accepted it. Now, if Ben Bone could see a distance between me and Shot, I had to wonder if Shot saw it too. Don't concern yourself with my business, Mr. Bone. I can always change my mind about turning you loose at Fort Kearney. Old Ben sprang up from a pile of driftwood and busied himself with a coffee pot.
I shouldn't have brought it up. No, sir, I knowed I shouldn't.
Tell me what you know about the Pope Gang.
The Pope Gang? Whoa, you ain't got no business with that bunch, do you? You ain't no kin, are you?
Just curious. I didn't want to slant any information we might have. I'd seen that old Bob Bone could change direction quicker than a Kansas twister.
Well, they're a damn rough bunch, I'll tell you. Not that I'm talking bad of them, you understand. Not if they're your friends or kinfolk.
They're neither.
Ah, I tell you the truth. They're some mean sons of bitches. They've stayed alive up here with all that going on, and that tells you something.
They're on terms with the Sioux?
No, they're just bad enough to hold their own. And the Sioux are cowardly without the odds in their favor. Red Cloud's warriors would run from a dead bulldog, in my opinion.
Well, they've sure impressed the hell out of Washington.
If the government had any sense, they would come through here and not leave an engine standing. I mean, kill them all. Bucks, squaws, papooses, the lot of them. Indians are low, cowardly, lying, cheating. And the Sioux is the lowest of all. I know. I've tried dealing with them. They're lazier than a Mex and dumber than a chunk of coal.
Hey, my mom was a Mexican.
I spun up with my pistol drawn and cocked. Bone disappeared down into the driftwood.
That's right. And my pappy's...
Hold it there. I glanced around for Jack and Shot as two drunks came stumbling out of the brush leading their horses. Hold it right there. I pointed my gun, but they just staggered closer. One reached for his gun and missed. Pulled his suspender loose and almost fell. His trousers dropped on one side. The other stepped back and pointed at his friend, reared back and cackled like a fool.
Did you see that? You scared runner out half out his britches.
Jack and Shod were running up from the trail. They came up, guns drawn. Kermit peeped around from behind a tree.
Look, Harvey, you caught him in a bad mood.
The fat one struggled to hold his trousers up with one hand and held his reins and a gallon jug in the other. Who the hell are you? How the hell did you get in here? I shot Jack and Shod a cold look. They shrugged.
Aw, we gone and startled you.
The lanky one wobbled forward and made the introductions.
I'm Harvey Kid Cole. This here's runaround Joe Felipe. His mama really is a Mexican, but my pappy ain't no, you know.
He glanced at Shod and almost turned sober.
The colored gentleman.
Shod smiled and lowered his rifle. Jack walked up and motioned to the jug.
Help yourself, sure enough.
Runaround hefted the jug to Jack and almost fell again. Jack caught him by the arm and steadied him.
Damn, boys, how do I get to where you're at?
Jack, we've got too much going on to... When Jack lowered the jug, his eyebrows pinched together across his nose. A dark blue shadow started at his forehead and drew down his face like a window shade. His mouth fell open.
Oh, Lord! This stuff will make a jackrabbit spit in a rattlesnake's eye.
Let me see that a second. I reached for the jug. Shod shook his head.
I don't know. We've got a lot going on.
Just a taste.
Watch it. It's made from bull juice and melted hammerheads.
Harvey Kid Cole's face split open in a one-tooth grin.
Surely to goodness, you're not...
Suddenly my knees jerked. Through a watery veil, I saw Ben Bone stand up slowly from a pile of driftwood and venture forward.
Give me that before you spill it.
It's everybody in a different spot. I saw a man's ears fold over once.
Who are you people?
Whew. Shad's eyes watered.
We come up from Texas or somewhere. Just run a herd up to Montana with the Riedelman drive. We're the only ones to get a herd through all summer.
Sure did. We's tougher than a boot full of rocks.
Shad held the jug against his chest. His eyes looked like a holy roller who'd just seen Jesus. His spectacles dangled crooked on his nose.
Now we're gonna stay drunk till hell wouldn't have us.
Sure I am.
Haven't you had any trouble with Red Cloud? Bone eased up close to Kid Cole, grinned and nodded to the jug.
Get out of here, you doggone weasel. Not a lick of trouble out of Red Cloud. Shot at a couple of outlaws trying to carve out a steak. They so hungry up there, they'd eat the ass out of a running wildcat.
Runaround Joe stepped forward and almost fell.
Don't Red Cloud live up here?
Come on, let's get some coffee.
Cowboys.
We sat around the low flame, sipping coffee and listening to our stomachs growl. Both Kid Call and Runaround Joe had passed out on the driftwood while we cooked a pot of beans and tried to eat. When Kid Call woke up, he raised the lid on the beans with a shaking hand, turned stark white around the eyes, then lowered it with a nervous rattle.
Here, try some coffee first.
He had to use both hands to pick up the metal cup. To keep him from scalding himself, Shad took the cup, filled it, and after trying to hand it to him twice, he set it down near his feet and let it pick it up best he could. He rubbed his face and nodded toward Runaround Joe.
Is he dead?
Nah, just sleeping.
That's just as good, poor old boy.
I glanced at Jack. He just shrugged with a puzzled look.
He's knocked up some whore down at Sugar Cave Bartlett's. Then his paw got kicked in the nuts by a red bull. They talk like he'll never straighten up all the way. Say, who are y'all anyway?
His shaking hand slipped toward his holster.
It's all right. You fellas just staggered in and passed out on us. No problem.
Thank God. For a second, I thought you was Indians.
Speaking of Indians, how have you two managed to stay alive?
I don't know. Just drunk, I reckon. I don't really drink too often. But him with that whore pumped up and his paw packing his balls in a water bucket, I just felt sorry for him, poor son bitch. I ought to kill him. He spent his money and mine on 15 gallons of wonderful stuff. Got it buried in the rocks out yonder. Now we can't go home till it's gone. My wife and baby's waiting in Texas or somewhere without a pot to piss in. And I got $7 to show for the summer. Y'all from around here?
Missouri. We're running a string up to Fort Kearney. He shook his head and made a trembling one-toothed grin.
Then y'all's crazier than us. Least we're drunk and can't help it.
Why don't you sober up and light out of here? This ain't the place to be right now, drunk or sober.
Hell, I know it. But we can't go till we've drunk up the whiskey. That'd be like throwing away our pay.
How much you want for a couple of canteens of that old door slammer?
Jack!
It's my vacation. The hell you expect?
Oh, mister, cut you off a couple from that jug and drink it up. That's all it's good for. Quicker it's gone, the quicker I can go home and fight with the wife. Run around, can marry that whore and go help his pa straighten his back up. Poor some bitch. I wouldn't be in his boots for $100.
Kid Cole walked to the jug. They handed the jug to Jack.
If y'all don't mind.
He fell down, curled up in a ball, and went back to sleep.
Can you believe that? I take back everything I've said about vacationing in an Indian war.
Bone had managed to take a couple of sips of the whiskey before Jack filled his canteen. Bone sat across the fire from Shad and me. After a few minutes staring into the low flames, he spoke in a quiet voice.
So, Mr. Shod, where did you say you're from?
I didn't.
The whiskey must have had Bone feeling brave.
Why, I bet you're from one of them abolitionist states, ain't you? One of them that heaped the war on fellers like Mr. Beatty here.
I watched Shod out of the corner of my eye. I knew exactly what Bone was doing. I was curious to see just how far he would take it. Shod-eyed Bone.
What is this?
I kept staring straight into the fire.
I'm just making conversation, that's all. Hell, you fellas are partners. I reckon you talk all the time about where you're from and what you believe.
Kermit lay piled against a saddle, asleep a few feet from the cowboys.
Oh, I see. You haven't said a dozen words to me since we caught you trying to ambush us. Now you've had a couple of drinks and you want to make a conversation, is that it?
Yeah, no harm asking where a man's from, is there?
Ordinarily, no. But in your case, I take offense at anything you could possibly ask. So if you persist in your attempt at conversation, be advised that I will reach over and squash your head like a little ripe grape.
Bone's eyes bulged.
Nothing's nicer than a little fireside chat.
Jack pitched the canteen to me. Passing the canteen to Shod. I watched him tip back a drink without taking his eyes off Bone. When Bone reached for the canteen, Shod tapped it and passed it on to Jack.
I can see how drinking could definitely get you killed, Mr. Bone.
We sat staring into the low flames. I felt the whiskey weave around my mind and draw my eyes deeper into the flickering fire. The canteen came to me again, but I passed it on, already feeling a warm, powerful surge. The night fell silent except for the sound of the river. I reminded myself that we were sitting in the middle of the last hunting ground of the mighty Sioux Nation, and that no matter what was to come in the days and weeks ahead, what was happening here tonight was the only thing that mattered for now. I had arrived in the land of Bull Bear, Red Cloud, and Strike Three. Day by day, mile by mile, they were becoming more to me than good names for racehorses. Something wild, innocent, free, and elusive permeated this time and place, but it only caressed my spirit briefly, then disappeared. So where are you from, Shod?
Michigan, but I attended college in Delaware. After college, I served in the Union Army, cleaning slop ditches and hauling bodies, like any educated man would do.
He rubbed the toe of his boot back and forth in the outer ashes and studied them as if thinking of something more to say. Finally, he shrugged.
Suppose I'll stand first watch if there are no objections.
None at all. Wake me in a couple hours.
Of course.
He turned and walked away toward the string of horses.
Yeah, I reckon he thought he was too damn good to shovel and haul dead meat.
Bone had waited until Shod was well out of sight. I reached across the fire as Jack handed me the canteen of whiskey, but instead of drinking, I capped it and let it fall on the ground beside me.
Ah, you know what? If you ask me...
Nobody asked you. I glanced toward Jack as he lay back and pulled his hat down over his eyes.
No matter where I roam, it's just like home to me.
All's I'm saying is, he ain't the kind of man you can trust if the going gets a little dangerous. He'll cut and run, you watch. Oh, you're lucky me and Kermit showed up. Sure are.
I leaned back against my saddle and just lay there for the longest time, staring at Ben Bone, listening to the silence of night and the rush of Powder River. The next morning, I stared at the two cowboys who sat holding their heads. Bone brewed a fresh pot of coffee.
From now on, Jack, no more drinking until we're out of here and headed back to Missouri.
You do what you want. I'm on vacation.
I mean it, Jack. Look at them. What will become of them? They'll never make it. They'll die here drunk and penniless. That's all for me. No more charity and no more bargains, Jack. Anything we run into from here on will be the last devils thrown out of hell.
Coming down a little harsh on your fellow man, ain't ya?
Jack smoothed back his hair and dropped his hat on his head.
You don't know. They might be the only ones to make it. They could wind up rich and become chairman of the Temperance League.
You do what you want. I'm staying sharp-eyed until we're out of here.
Don't suppose you could use a couple more drunks, could you? We don't know much about sheep, but we're good hands.
See what I mean? It's horses, Cole. We're running a string of horses.
Hell, never mind. If I can't tell what you're running, I got no business trying to run them.
Well, we don't need any help, but you're welcome to ride along if you stay sober. It'd be safer.
No. Thanks anyway.
Run around, Joe stood up and spread his hands as if to steady himself on a wobbling planet.
We better stay close to them jugs till they're gone.
You can bring them with you.
No, I'd hate to take a chance on breaking them if we run into trouble. Besides, we already made plans.
We can certainly appreciate that.
Hope you know what you're doing. It could get a little tense around here.
If we don't, we'll figure it out as we go. If you see any Indians, you might tell them we're just here getting drunk. We ain't looking for no trouble. Was I wearing a hat running around?
One of us was. I don't know which.
It's on your head, damn it. Why don't you ride along with us a few miles anyway? You ain't in no shape to be wandering around out here.
No, we'll just drink our way from gully to draw. We'll do all right.
We gazed up on our left. Scattered pine and spruce towered above yellow cottonwood across rock ledges and up the rising slope from the valley. Ahead, the valley came to a narrowing point at the end of vision. To our right, Powder River curved along like a large brown snake shrouded in a silver mist. If it was mine, I reckon I'd die for it, too. An eagle swept in from nowhere, spread its wings against the air as if putting on brakes, and suspended itself in an updraft.
And that's what old Red Cloud is fixing to do. Of course, he's gonna leave a smear of blood across it. Can't blame him.
If it was mine, I reckon I'd kill for it, too.
I seen how attached you get to other people's property. I'd hate to see how you'd be with your own.
Come on, Jack. I didn't mean to kill Pope, and you know it. Something just took over inside me, and I pulled the trigger.
Maybe that's how it is with Red Cloud. Maybe he just sees all of us as a bunch of wild men riding off on his horses.
But his horses ain't stolen like ours are.
Don't fool yourself. The Sioux stole this land from somebody, same as the government is stealing it from them. Land don't just happen to you. You either steal it yourself or you buy it from somebody who stole it. Either way, it bears somebody's handprint. They think the Great Spirit made the land just for them. Of course, I'd like to think the same thing about every whore in Kansas City, and you think it about every horse twix here in Missouri.
Got it all figured out, do you?
No, sir, just the parts that suits me, like everybody else. I'm still working on the rest. If you get right down to it, how could land belong to anybody unless they take it from somebody else?
Here we go.
It's the truth. When you can't buy it, beg for it, or trick somebody out of it, you just forget appearances and you take it. Law of nature, man's nature. Let me hear you deny it.
Let me work on it a while. I'll get back to you. Big Shod stood strapping gear to Ben Bones' pack mule. Jack wandered off to the string of horses where they watered and grazed. Ben and Kermit Bone were spreading the remains of our campfire and covering the spot with driftwood. I went over to help Shod, and something slapped the ground, raising a puff of dust. I dived into a pile of driftwood.
Beatty, you lousy coward, I know who you are.
It's Flowers.
Shod and Bone lay hunched against a pine log. Kermit lay 10 feet behind them, flat on the rocky ground. All three stared at me.
What's he talking about?
Long story.
Jack had to have heard the shot, and by now he would be trying to take position. I glanced at the rifle in my saddle scabbard. This time the shot struck a rock and whistled past us. My horse jumped farther away.
I've got to get a rifle. Cover me.
We're out of pistol range.
Just make some noise, Shod. It'll take him a second to know.
You're crazy.
Do it!
Shod's .44 exploded behind me. I snatched the rifle and turned to dive back. Just then... I froze near my horse and scanned the high ridgeline.
What the hell was that?
There was the glint of a gun barrel in the distance as the woods turned silent above us. Shod slipped to his saddle, drew his rifle, and steadied it across his horse's back. We walked our horses slowly into a clump of spruce, our rifles fixed on the ridge.
After a few minutes of breathless silence...
You won't believe this!
But before we could answer, we swung our rifles toward six mounted Indians surrounding our camp. They stopped suddenly and sat still as stone. I flipped my rifle to my shoulder.
Don't shoot! Play Shoshone!
Shoshone? My rifle lowered slightly, but I stayed ready to throw down.
Yeah, they've sided with the army against the Sioux and Cheyenne.
A young warrior wearing an army tunic with sleeves torn off nudged his horse forward. Starting toward us with a nasty expression, he glanced around our camp.
Yeah, but walk easy with them. They can get real ugly. Army lets them get by with anything.
Stopping his horse near Big Shod, the Indian reached out with a feather-decorated muzzle loader and poked it at Shod's chest. His hand was not on the trigger, and the rifle wasn't cocked.
Bene, duhu diena pehe.
Shod glared at him, glanced toward me out of the corner of his eye, and tensed forward.
Stand still! If he makes a move, I'll splatter his brains out.
The Indian snapped his head toward me with a cold stare.
Damn it! I should have told you, most of this bunch speaks English.
Next time, let me know things like that. The Indian jumped his horse toward me and jolted to a halt less than 3 feet away. If it was meant to scare me, it worked, but I didn't budge. I came a hair from blowing his head off. Now his thumb was on the hammer of the flintlock. A Colt 44 lay in his lap, hanging from a long strip of rawhide looped around his neck. Beneath my shirt, I carried a 44 in the same manner. He shouted something in Indian, and I turned to Bone.
But you said he speaks English.
He's just doing this to insult you, right, Two-Hand?
Two-Hand gave a smug grin.
He wants to know what the shooting was all about.
Tell him I said go to hell. I spoke to Bone, but stared right into Two-Hand's eyes. A flash of fire shot across the Indian's face. If he wants to talk, tell him to talk to me. If he don't, tell him to shut up and get out of here.
Easy.
I knew that Jack was above us on the ridge. I knew his rifle was leveled, and knowing it made all the difference in the world.
Well, you might want to go along with this a little. Mr. Two-Hand here is big medicine.
Tell him some idiot has been following us trying to shoot me. I don't know why.
Is it because you shot Jip Pope in the back, nutted him with a Glades knife, then slit his throat?
Shod rolled his eyes.
Now that's... No, that's a whole other thing.
I caught a glimpse of Kermit. His hand dropped from his throat to his crotch.
Or is it soldiers? Because you stole a string of horses.
Neither!
Jack called out from the edge of the woods. All heads turned toward him as he came forward slowly. His rifle pointed at the Indians with one hand, and his other closed at his side and dripping blood.
If he's got any more questions, tell him to write us a letter.
I felt a pounding start in my forehead, slow and steady like the beat of a funeral drum. I knew what came next. Ben Bone jumped close to the Indian's horse with his hands up in clear view.
Hell, how is my friend Chief Washakie? Does he still carry the long knife I gave him?
The Indian's thumb slid from the hammer of the rifle and rested on the stock. Slowly, he turned from Jack and faced Ben Bone. I tried to silence the funeral drum by breathing deep.
Washakie is old and worthless, like yourself, old man.
But still gives orders and braises a man's hide if they ain't followed, Two-Hand.
A sly smile crept across Bone's face. I was surprised to see it, but he knew how to handle Two-Hand.
You have a sharp tongue. It wouldn't look good on my lodgepole.
I stood ready. Instead of Bone cowering from the threat, he stepped forward. I glanced over at Shod. His hand tightened on his rifle. Kermit stood slack-jawed and helpless. His shotgun lay empty 10 yards away.
These boys ain't playing Two-Hand.
The Indian backed his horse a few steps, ignoring Bone's warning. He pointed toward Big Shod.
He must come with us. His people are friends of our enemies, the Sioux.
I don't think so. Again, the drumbeat started in my head as I gripped the rifle.
We take him and 2 horses each.
Listen real close. Ride out of here, or all you're taking is a face full of lead. It was ready to happen. I felt it. Two-Hand before us raised his hand. I figured when he dropped it, I would get him and maybe another 2. Jack would get a couple before they knew what hit them. Shad would catch one, maybe two, and hell, that was all of them.
We take him and one horse each.
He tensed his hand as if ready to drop it and start the show. I felt sweat start to trickle down my upper lip. Are you sure he understands me? The funeral drum pounded hard in my forehead. I took a close aim on the Indian's chest, and he backed his horse toward his warriors.
Easy, he's backing down. Don't do nothing to make him look bad. Appearance is everything to them.
When Tuan backed into his group 30 feet away, he handed his rifle and pistol to the Indian beside him and drew a painted stick from his riding blanket. In a flash, he bolted toward Big Shot, waving the stick in the air.
Stand still! He's only counting coup!
Ben's words came too late. As Tuan reached out to slap Shad with the stick, Shad dropped his rifle and snatched him from his horse with one hand.
Don't!
Shad swung him high in the air, his ass in one hand, his neck in the other, and slammed him down. He cocked his knee like breaking kindling.
He was only counting coup!
Big Shad rolled the broken body from his knee and glared at the rest of the Indians. They stared in disbelief for a second, then backed into the woods and disappeared. Tuhan lay on his side. His eyes stared through the veil between this world and the other. Quiet Jack walked over, reached out a boot, and nudged the Indian over on his back. It seemed like a second passed before the lower half followed.
Lord God, what a lick.
Damn it, he was only counting coup.
Well, maybe they ought to stick to counting their fingers. We ain't here to take any guff, right, Shad? Shad turned away and walked to the horses.
That big fool just killed a Shoshone war chief in front of his warriors while he was counting coup. They'll be on him till they get him. Us too.
Well, they had their chance.
Well, you can thank the Sioux for keeping the Shoshone from killing us just then.
What are you saying?
I'm saying the Sioux must be awfully close right now, and there must be a big swarm of them. That's why Tuhan's warriors pulled away. They knew the Sioux were close enough to hear the ruckus, and you can bet your ass they heard that shooting a while ago.
There's just no let-up, is there, Jack?
I reckon not. And look at this.
He held out his closed hand and opened it a foot from my face. I jumped back at the sight of a bloody glob of meat.
Jesus, Jack, don't stick something like that in a man's face. What is it?
It's the upper half of C.W. Flowers' left ear. That crazy cur nearly ate him up before he got away.
Where is that dog?
Last I seen him, he was chasing Flowers and his horse out across the ridge.
I've never seen a dog hold a grudge the way he does. It ain't natural.
He's a black brindle catahoula. You ain't supposed to kick him. It's bad luck.
I never heard that.
Well, it's the truth. You ever see Flowers, just ask him.
Shad and Kermit had the mule packed and the campsite cleared as Jack and I watched the ridgeline.
What about Tuhan's body?
Well, they'll come back for him. Don't worry, you've done enough already.
What's all the racket?
Kid Cole staggered back into the camp.
I don't believe this. Somebody should stop them for their own good.
Kid Cole gazed bleary-eyed at Tuhan's body.
Who's she?
I reckon you're drunk enough it won't hurt you too bad when they kill you.
Enough socializing. Let's move out before we get more company. For 3 days, we traveled among the shadow of rock ledges. To get to Fort Kearney, we knew we would have to break cover and cross miles of open grassland. On the fourth day, we held up along the wall of a deep basin and waited for the cover of darkness.
They've already spotted us. Might want to think about turning back. You'll never get them horses up to Kearney.
We gazed across a sea of grass. Let me make something clear, Mr. Bone. Maybe you know these Indians a lot better than I do, but when it comes to staying alive, Jack and I ain't no newcomers. So far, everybody I've met has told me I'm crazy for trying to deal horses to Fort Kearney. But every day that passes, I'm just a little bit closer. I reckon lots of folks thought Sutter was crazy when he struck out to California looking for gold.
I shouldn't say a word, Mr. Beatty. Not a word. I don't know you felt so strongly about it.
Jack handed me his telescope and I scanned the grassland.
So now you're comparing our string of horses to the California gold rush?
Are you gonna start in on me too?
No, I'm just checking now and then to make sure you don't get too far away from yourself. You've quit drinking and started talking about the gold rush. I know a fellow once who quit drinking and thought his brother-in-law could fly.
Showed him off a cliff. Nearly killed him.
I was just making a point. Where would we be today if nobody ever jumped out and took a chance?
Just don't go thinking this is California or them horses are made of gold.
I'll try not. I continued scanning the horizon through the lens. In the distance, a party of four Indians topped a knoll and disappeared down into a gully. In seconds, they came back in sight. The one in front was a lean, middle-aged man wearing a skin shirt, wool pants cut off at the knees, and skin moccasins. Behind him, a bare-chested younger man with beaded armbands kept watch in all directions from atop a spotted horse. Feathers waved in the horse's plaited mane. Further back, an Indian woman rode with a small child cradled in her lap. The child's legs bounced lifeless. I glanced around for Ben Boone, but he disappeared into cover. Take the glass and have a look at this. What do you make of it?
Fine-looking woman. Now, if I was to follow my mind right now...
Give me the glass. Gazing out, I searched for them again. Reckon they're Sioux? They weaved up and down across a low rise.
Maybe so, but just a little fancier than Two Hands Bunch, except for the one in front. He looks like he just fell off a freight train.
I watched as they pounded on across the grassland. Their horses looked tired. White froth dripped from their mouths and blew back in long strings. I had just started to take my eye from the lens when a handful of Indians came up out of the tall grass 10 feet in front of the riders. Holy! They're being ambushed!
Here, give me that lens and let me see.
I pushed his hand away. The Indian in the skin shirt reared his horse and spun away just as an arrow grazed his shoulder. The woman cut sharp and pounded away toward a rock ledge in the distance. The bare-chested Indian rode into the ambushers and jumped from his horse into their midst, swinging a war axe. He disappeared down in a flurry of knives and clubs. I watched the older Indian pull rein and fall back to cover the woman and child as she bolted past him. An ambusher jumped on the spotted horse and started after them. As the woman raced on for the rock cover, the older Indian pulled a single-shot rifle from his riding blanket and took aim slow and carefully toward the oncoming rider. The shot echoed into us a second after the Indian flew backwards off the spotted horse and rolled like a bundle of sticks.
Hoo-wee! These boys work fast!
Let me see, damn it!
Hang on! Now horses rose up from the grass, and in a second the ambushers were mounted and in pursuit. But the woman and child were just topping a rise of loose rock and headed into cover. I saw the older man sway, nearly coming off his horse. Then he righted himself and headed up the slope of loose rock. The seven or eight ambushers split into two groups. Part of them headed right behind the fleeing Indians, and the others swung wide to the right. I handed the lens shut to Jack. Yeah, that's it. Show's over.
I'll be damned. What happened? I could see them a little, but not enough to make it out.
Looked like a bunch of Shoshone ambushed some Sioux. I see now how they work. They come up out of the grass like snakes.
Kind of like the way we did back in the war?
It ain't the kind of fighting they teach at West Point.
They all fight that way. It's no wonder the Army can't get the jump on them.
By the time the Army figures them out, this war will be history.
They'll bury this one under the White House. Indians ain't supposed to win.
That night, we eased the horses down onto the grassland and pushed forward.
Keep them pointed straight across, Shad. Jack and I'll circle ahead wide and work back towards you. If anybody's waiting in the grass, we'll catch them from behind.
Shad nodded in approval. Jack and I rode out toward the spot where the Indians had run for cover. We could be there well before daylight and work our way along the bottom of the ridges to Port Kearney. I figured if the Indians took cover there, so could we. We split up and swung a wide circle for a half mile. When I met Jack at the end of the circle, we worked slowly back through the grass 10 yards apart.
Didn't I hear somewhere the Indians never attack at night?
I heard it once myself. Where did you hear it?
I'm an old Cherokee down on the Nations.
A sliver of moon floated in a swirling cloud. At the end of our first pass, I reined up beside Shad.
How's it going?
So far, very quiet. I'd feel better without those two behind me.
He nodded over his shoulder. Ben and Kermit Bone rode at the rear of the string 30 yards back.
You want to switch with one of us and make a pass?
No, I'll manage. The horses are grazing their way across. As long as they're quiet, I can hear anything behind me.
Well, we should be across in 5 passes.
Perhaps I'll try a little of what's in Jack's canteen. Seem to make those cowboys invisible.
Jack handed him the canteen.
Oh, goodness. That's it for me. Where did they get this stuff?
It's trade liquor. I ran across some back in the war. Illegal as hell, but the law's been overlooking it for years. It's put whole tribes out of business.
I can see how.
Too much of it'll kill you. Or flatten your brain to where you can't find your butt with both hands. Since that's my last one for a while, I thought I'd make it a good one.
Jack and I reined around and headed out again. We made another long sweep, and coming back for the third time, my mare stepped sideways as I braced the reins to keep her from bolting. I readied with my rifle in one hand as my mare swung sideways and I nudged her forward easy. Jack heard her and came riding over. Quiet Jack had his .44 cocked and raised shoulder high. I slipped from my saddle quiet as a ghost, crouched down, and stepped forward through the tall grass. 15 feet into the grass, I froze at the sight of the dead Indian from the earlier skirmish. His beaded armbands were gone, so were his ears and half his scalp. His mouth had been slashed open from ear to ear, his jawbones broken to cut out his tongue. For all the gruesome killing I'd seen in my life, I gagged on my own bile. His testicles lay beside him in a bloody heap. A foot-long string of gut still connected them to his crotch.
He's had a rough day.
Damn it, Jack! Don't do that!
I stood up trembling, taking the reins to my mare from Jack's hand. Jack nodded at the mess on the ground.
You know that had to hurt.
These people are animals, Jack. Low-down animals. No wonder the government wants them killed. They should be.
They didn't invite us here.
Jack turned his collar up against the cool wind and holstered his .44.
What in hell would make them do something like this?
Who knows? Indians have strange ways. This might be some great honor.
Honor?
I looked up at Jack and hunched up inside my coat. He'd been nipping at the whiskey off and on since we left the camp along Powder River. I felt better now that he'd stopped.
Yeah, for all we know, the old boy might have spent his life looking for a chance to get his nuts cut out and slung on the ground.
Jack, I meant what I said earlier about a man following his mind.
I know you did.
Reckon it was true what Dave Mather said about him coming up here last year and making a bunch of money?
Hard to say. Mather's not an easy man to pin down. Thinking about turning back?
I've thought about it ever since we left Crofton. But I just can't do it for some reason. I set out to do this, and I gotta see it through.
Something moved in the grass, and I drew my pistol before I recognized the Catahoula cur slinking along. He'd stopped for a second and raised his nose in the air, then lowered his whole body and slipped through the grass as quiet as a spirit. I noticed his shoulders had broadened since we'd been on the trail, and his tail no longer curved back under his belly. Now it stood up in the shape of a living question mark.
Besides, we've gone too far to turn back now.
Before dawn, we'd climbed the slope where the Indians had fled the day before. Daylight cast a thin, distant glow as we rounded the horses into a deep ravine, no more than 60 feet wide and a half mile long. Ben Bone glanced up the rock walls.
Well, this is a damn good place for an ambush.
And a damn good place to hide a string of horses. As Jack rode ahead to scout the ravine, Kermit and Big Shot drew ropes across the rear of the herd, boxing it in. I rode forward far enough to keep an eye on Jack's back in case he ran into trouble. This place was as safe as any under the circumstances. Apparently everybody and his brother was roaming Powder River, and everybody but us was bent on killing somebody, even the Catahoula cur. He'd return before morning and lay stretched out on his back with flies circling his belly. Not risking a fire, we ate beef jerky and hard biscuits, washing them down with water from our canteens. Ben Bone stayed close by my side all morning, studying the top of the rock walls.
Don't you reckon Kermit and I should load these guns up? It makes good sense, don't it?
I squinted into the sun's glare and studied the far end of the ravine. Yeah, it does.
Yeah, then you'll give me some bullets?
Nah, I reckon not. Bone sat shaking his head as I walked to the other side of the herd and sat on a rock. I watched flies swarm in a dark spot on the ground 10 feet in front of me. I thought of the Indian yesterday as I watched the hungry insects gather on the ground. That must have been the way it looked out in the tall grass. a swarm of Shoshone thirsting for blood as they ripped out the Sioux brave's tongue and testicles. I reckon God must have sat above that terrible scene and watched in curiosity, the same way I sat and watched the blowfly swarm on the dark spot of blood. Suddenly my spine stiffened as a chill shot up my back.
Blood? Oh no!
I spun around from the rock as a flurry of feet and fists came charging into my chest. Even as we pitched backwards, rolling in the dirt, my free hand going to my boot for the Glades knife, I saw the trail of blood leading under a cliff overhang. I yanked back on the hair, saw the exposed throat, slung back my knife. One slash, one would do it.
Huh?
But I saw the face of the young woman from yesterday, and I had to stop my arm all at once, like slamming on a wagon brake.
Kill her!
Jod reached out and pulled her off me. Dust swirled and burned my face where she'd clawed me. She struggled against Shad's grip like a gnat against an elephant. I ran my hand across my cheek and saw the thin smear of blood. I remember the trail of blood behind me. The older Indian from yesterday?
Get down!
We dropped behind the rock, peering over in the darkness beneath the cliff overhang. Shad's hand went across her mouth, covering most of her face. I dropped my knife and draw my .44.
Lady, who all's in there?
Her eyes were wide above Shad's hand. Her face was turning blue.
Shad, she can't breathe. Let her breathe.
She swayed forward and I caught her shoulders.
She can't speak English?
No one.
I'm wrong.
I glanced over the rock and back at her.
No one?
Well, then we'll go and shoot. She grabbed my arm.
No! My father, he is there. And my son.
Her hands gestured quickly as she spoke, as if speaking sign language at the same time.
My father, wounded. My son, sick.
Armed? She drew a long line in the air with her hand.
Big 50.
Great. He's got a damn buffalo rifle. That's what I saw him shoot yesterday. He's good.
Who's good?
Quiet Jack walked up without us hearing a sound. He leaned on the rock and stared into the dark crevice. He hooked his thumb in his belt as if he would lean there a while.
Get down, Jack. There's an Indian in there with a 50 caliber rifle.
Oh, oh, oh.
Jack hit the ground beside me. He glanced past the young woman, then snapped his head back toward her. He looked her up and down with a devilish smile.
Well, howdy, ma'am. I'm Mr. Smith. Call me Jack. And you?
Jack, we've got a situation here.
I believe you.
Listen, damn it. You ever see what a Big 50 does to a man close up?
Have you?
No, I ain't. But some have, and I know it'll kill a buffalo. And look, Jack, will you just pay attention here?
Kermit Bone showed up, wiping sleep from his eyes.
Get down, boy!
We could have seen what a Big 50 does close up if you'd left him alone.
If he starts shooting, he'll draw in every Indian within 10 miles.
Yeah, who carries a Big 50?
Deep in the shadow of the crevice, a 4-foot gash in the rock wall led into a small cave. Once inside, I held the woman in front of me with my arm around her throat, my knife in my left hand beside her ear. In my right hand, I held the small torch.
I swear I will! I'll kill her deader than hell! Hear me?
There was no way I would have killed her, but I needed leverage.
He no here. Too weak.
I'm a killer! Hear that? I'm a killer here! Don't try anything!
Ben Bone stepped in behind me. I nearly swung at him as he brushed against my arm. He had found and lit a torch from the supplies and walked further into the cave. I let him lead the way.
He weak, lost much blood.
A few feet more, the torch glow came upon the wounded Indian leaning against the rock wall. His rifle lay near his hand beside him. 2 feet away, the small boy lay rolled in a ball, shivering like it was dead of winter. I turned the woman loose, and she ran to her son. Ben stepped closer and held the torch over the wounded man. The Indian's eyes drifted as if lost in a fog. Bone kicked the big rifle away.
Lord of mercy, look who we've gone and captured.
Who?
Oh, I'll kill him and the reward's all mine!
Bone snatched his pistol from his belt. The woman grabbed Bone's leg. He kicked her away and spread an ugly grin, the grin I'd seen that night in the woods. Bone pointed the pistol at the Indian. His face twisted into a terrible death mask. He pulled the trigger. In his excitement, Bone forgot he had no bullets. I just shook my head as I reached down to help the Indian.
Damned idiot.
The woman carried the boy over and laid him beside the old man.
Damn it! No luck. Not for the longest damn time.
He bent double as if stricken by a cramp.
Who's your father?
He is called Mak Pia Sha, Red Cloud, chief of the Sioux Nations.